is us like learning in public and like trying to
literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We are literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
In our pilot episode, we began by talking about recurring dreams that we had when we were younger. You used to dream about looking in the mirror and seeing yourself as a little white girl. And I used to dream about looking in the mirror and seeing myself with green eyes. And these are painful memories and what they revealed about us, about what we were taught to value, what we longed for, what we didn't get from the world around us. Well, today I want to talk about another kind of dream, the ones we have when we're awake. I want to talk about our dreams for our futures and for our lives, because these kinds of dreams are really idealized. We always hear, follow your dreams. If you can dream it, you can do it. People live their whole lives chasing dreams. And there's the American dream, you know, an entire country's ideology is based around having wild dreams and trying to make them a reality. And just as we're seeing the American nightmare finally bring the supposed dream crashing down, a lot of us find in our lives that our dreams don't come true. And sometimes that's because we didn't believe and chase after them like we're always told to do. Sometimes it's because we live in a world that is hostile to us and prevents us from doing what we should be able to do. And just like those dreams that you and I used to have when we saw ourselves as what we were led to believe we had to be in order to be loved and seen, on brand there. Sometimes our dreams form for all the wrong reasons. Sometimes our dreams themselves are not aligned with who we are and what we have to give to the world and what would actually make us content. So that's what I really want to explore today, how our dreams have fueled us and how they've held us back, and what the difference is between a wild dream that motivates us and dreams that just waste our time. So I'm curious to ask you, do you feel like you've experienced both of those kinds of dreams, or what's the connotation of those types of dreams for you?
I feel like most of my life is like a series of believing that I can't achieve something. And then I'm like, why don't we just try this thing? And then I'm like, oh, I surprised myself. And I've the idea of dreaming beyond some of the scripts that we are given, like in this like very capitalist world where like these are the jobs that exist or whatever, like I'm just beginning to explore what that could look like. You know what I mean? So I'm so excited and grateful that we're talking about dreams today, because like you said, we started off like the whole podcast talking about like my recurring dream, which now I will go back and say like maybe that was a nightmare. Like I don't know if that was like a positive, you know what I mean? Because like, yeah, it was aspirational in the moment and like I felt like I like that dream was like really comforting, but now looking back I'm like, wow, that's like nightmarish, like in its yeah. own like little girl sunken place, like in the internalized amount of like anti-blackness and like white supremacy sort of and like Eurocentric beauty standards that I had obviously internalized at such a young age. So I'm excited to talk about dreams from like a, I don't know if the word is like from a positive place, but like from a place where we're not just talking about like how that scarred me, but like things that we create of our own volition, out of our own like creative like imagination that drive us towards the things that we desire, and not just like from an individual standpoint of like I have a dream for myself, but like as a collective. I'm really excited for us, and I'm happy that you mentioned I wrote like the Canadian dream and the American dream and like what that means, especially for myself, like being a child of immigrants and having those kinds of narratives in the back of my mind. So anyways, I'm stoked. I'm really excited about this conversation, and I'm grateful that you are taking us through this today.
Yeah. So when you were a kid, what were your dreams for your future? Did you have like a career you wanted, or how did you see yourself in the future? And is that something you thought about a lot?
Yeah, that's a really, okay. So as we know, my mind is deceived. So like the earliest memories that I have of myself thinking about how I wanted to be in the future, I just knew that I was like, it was well beyond my wildest dreams to be a person who could live independent of my family. Like for some reason, like that in and of itself seemed like it was never going to happen. Like, I was never going to be able to fall in love. I was never going to be able to be like decide what I do in my life. Like, that wasn't even, I don't know why that was. And maybe for the most part, it was like, I just didn't see future me being a person that like could enjoy life. I don't know like how sad I was as a child, and like clearly that wasn't me the whole time, but like looking back at it, I just like, you know, people will be like, yeah, when I was a little girl, like Bonnie Henry, our like provincial health officer, like there's so many exposés on her about like when she was a kid, she was like 7 and she was in the hospital with her sister who had appendicitis, and she like knew she wanted to be a doctor and she like declared it. I was like, at some point I wanted to be a nutritionist, but like I don't know why. I have no idea why. I just was like, I like, you know, telling people what to do, and I like to eat, so that seems like a good, like, I just didn't, and that's just for like jobs. I didn't really think about the future too much. I think I was just like too fixated on the present and like feeling my feelings of like preteen teen angst that like I didn't really have a vision for myself. But how about you? Like, what was your, what was like dream Premila from the vantage point of child Premila?
Well, I remember when I was really young, I wanted to be a writer, like a novelist. That was my first thing that I ever remember. And then when I got more to be like preteen, probably is when it would have started. I love, this will not surprise you, I loved like performing.
What?
Wait. So, oh, it did surprise you? Really?
Well, like kind of. I mean, there's parts. Wait, where's Leo in your chart again?
Moon.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's in there. She's in there.
And your moon does tend to be more like, kids tend to show their moon sign more.
Okay. That would make sense, because I was very chatty as a child, and that's my Gemini moon. Okay, continue. Continue, please.
You're still chatty, but...
Yeah. But it was like distracting in class, like that kind of shit. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when I was, preteen, that started to be what I dreamed about. And I, as you know, did not have a good time growing up at all. Like, I was very unhappy in my environment. So I started to fixate more and more on that and sort of think about what it was going to be like when I escaped where I lived. And so, like a lot of kids, that meant thinking about like being a musician, being famous, and those dreams sort of ended up being this like elaborate fantasy world for me that really is what got me through my teen years, was just like escaping somewhere else.
Yeah. You know what? As you're talking about this, as you're talking about like your dream of being a writer, there was a whole phase in my life when I was like 13, 14, 15, I played guitar and I would write songs, and I had part of myself that was like alter ego Nick, where I like wrote music, and I was like, what if I like became a songwriter? Cause I like loved music. Yeah. But it was one of those things where I think by the age of 16, I just thought like, this is clearly not something that I can do to make money. And I also felt unsupported to explore that side of like my creative self within the confines of my family, where it wasn't like we were doing, I don't know. I just didn't feel like I was able to like pursue anything that was in the creative arts. So I was good at school enough that I was kind of like, well, clearly I'm going to do something that's like school-ish, that's like university oriented. And I just like, yeah. So anyways, I didn't want to take away from what you were saying, but I'm like, oh my God, like I really repressed that. Like I can play guitar, and I have like books full of like old songs that I used to write. But it was like a hidden part of myself very much.
Yeah. Well, and I'm really curious about what that hidden part of yourself was, and maybe what those dreams at the time did for you. Like you said, it was like an alter ego. So I'm curious how that might have allowed you to express something that couldn't be expressed.
Oh girl, we're gonna get deep. Cause like, you know how, you know that I was like raised very Christian. And so that included like going to Christian school. That also included being raised in the church, and I taught Sunday school, and I was like a camp counselor for Vacation Bible School. Like I was very immersed in like the Christ life. And basically like I had a lot of internalized, I would say like, I was just like really scared of going to hell. And I always thought that I was like definitely not like pure enough or like good enough or like clean enough. And as you're like a teenager exploring your sexuality or just like getting excited about things like, I don't know, fucking masturbation, I would feel so much shame about that I would write music. And it was basically like sad love songs to Jesus. Like I would be like, most of my songs had this theme of like feeling unworthy, feeling shame, feeling like all these dark emotions. And I remember when I was maybe in the eighth grade, we had like a school talent show at my Christian school. And I sang one of the songs that I had written. I did it as a performance. And the response was kind of like, what was that? And so after that, when I was 13, I'm like, I'm never sharing these things with anybody else. Like I didn't feel like I could express that side of myself, because from the outside, I felt like I gave the illusion that I had my shit together. And I felt that I gave this impression that I was like really Christ-like and really godly. But like, I felt like I was like a double agent almost. And like, I never felt like I was good enough. So it was definitely like an alternate ego, so much to the point where I felt like I actually just like couldn't show up as that self, as that like broken, shame-filled teenager. And like I was like 16, like I was in so much isolation. That's what like it makes me feel sad thinking about that version of myself, because I'm like, I wasn't happy, but I gave the impression that I was like a happy person, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally relate to that I wasn't showing the signs of hating my, I mean I kind of was, but I don't think that everybody around me got or knew what I really felt like internally, you know, like how isolated I felt and how much my emotional needs were not met. And I felt like I could, in some ways, I could almost get them met through this alter ego as well. It's like, okay, I can't show these parts of myself in my real life, but I can like imagine it somehow. And it's like, it's not as good, but it also is surprisingly effective in a way. Like it is actually helpful.
It sustained like my alternate ego, whatever, like that kept me, I guess it just kept me like expressing, like even if I was at my worst where I felt like super alone and like full of all those like negative feelings, it allowed me like a channel to express myself that I didn't feel like right. I had otherwise. And so I guess I'm curious for you, like what was the constraint in your world that made you feel like you couldn't express that like creative side of yourself?
I mean, a lot of things. I think I really didn't feel safe to express myself because, you know, I was bullied a lot in school, in elementary school, and that really like fucked me up. And then even at home, I felt very criticized. I didn't feel very accepted. So I didn't really want to like be seen doing anything because there would always be like comments and criticisms and things like that. And yeah. And then I think there also weren't really opportunities, like there weren't really arts programs in my high school or in my town. So there just wasn't the opportunity to do it, even if I had had the courage. So yeah, so it just became something that had to happen in my head. But then you said that at a certain point you were like, okay, well, this obviously, I don't think I'm going to be able to make money off this. So you decided to sort of turn towards school and more kind of traditional careers. I'm curious when that shift happened for you, or like how were you able to do that? Was there like any mourning that happened for you, or was it a pretty easy transition? Like how did you, were you able to start finding things that did feel more aligned with what your life actually should be like? Or
not until, well, answering the last question first, like not until like more recently, like now, like us having a podcast and being able to return to things like writing and expressing my thoughts and stuff like that. But it was quite an easy transition for me because I was already like excelling in school, and the expectation in my family was that I was going to go to university or I was going to go to college. Like I was going to do some sort of post-secondary, and it wasn't going to be like an arts based, like it wasn't going to be in the fine arts or creative arts. Like that was like not even a conversation. I mean, I suppose there was probably some amounts of mourning, but there was also, because my creative outlet was so tied to religion, there was a point by the time I was like graduating from high school and like starting UBC, I was shedding that like Christian side of myself anyways. So dropping the creative outlet that was tied to the shame that I experienced through the church was really easy, because I was like, well, I don't believe in God anymore. So or so I told myself. But like, I was like, I'm not a Christian anymore. I'm not identifying this way anymore. So therefore, like, it was so much easy to just like drop the thing that was so clearly tied to the pain that I experienced while I was practicing as a Christian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How about for you? Like, was there a point, because I met you like long after you finished undergrad and in our adult lives, like what was that experience sort of moving away, or did you continue to write? Like,
well, I think that, I mean, it was never going to happen for me. Like, I never pursued it. I never pursued a career in music or performance or anything like that. But I also didn't, there wasn't ever a time where I kind of decided, okay, this isn't going to happen for me. I just sort of, I kept doing the things I was expected to do. You know, I was expected to go to university. I was actually expected to go to grad school. So I just kept doing those things. And yeah, there wasn't really a time that I decided, okay, I'm going to give up on this or put this away. And it was really as an adult that I had to kind of go back and deal with my feelings about that, that I had. And I don't even think it was really about music. And I think this is part of what I wanted to talk about. I mean, music's a big part of my life, but again, I wasn't seriously pursuing that. Like, I wasn't actually like practicing and writing and like getting better and all of those things. But yeah. I think for me, a lot of it was trying to express parts of myself, qualities of myself that I didn't feel I was able to express. And also, I think where a lot of people's desire for, you know, a performance career and fame comes from is a desire for love and recognition.
Yeah, just which to be, like, seen and, like, accepted. Absolutely. Totally.
Yeah, which is why, you know, you see a lot of dysfunction, I think, in those industries, because so many people are trying to get those core needs met through a venue that's never really going to meet those needs.
So impersonal. So, like, not tied to you as a person. It's tied to, like, the talents that you have that people are able to, like, consume or relate to. But it's, like, no one knows you. I wonder how much, like, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, like, how much the like dreaming or like the lack of like pursuing the dream is so tied to fear, like fear of being like exposed, right? Or like for me, a big part of how I've stifled my dreams or how I've just like watered them down a little bit, diluted them, is like this question of like, who am I to want this? Like feeling like it's not for me to have those expectations of myself, you know?
Well, so that I think is a huge one. And then there's also this other idea that I want to bring in. And the person whose idea this is shitty in a lot of ways. So I'm not in any way co-signing this individual.
It's better not be Chris Brown. Like,
no, it's not Chris Brown. No. But I mean, this guy's shitty too. But anyways, I'm of the school of thought that, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
We cannot support somebody, but if they have an interesting idea, we can talk about the idea. Okay. So Charlemagne the God. Extremely
Leonard,
problematic person.
Leonard. Yeah, like he stresses me out, and then there comes when I'm like, I want to see you win. But anyways, continue with this.
Yes. So yeah. Again, not co-signing all the shitty things he's done.
Yes.
But so he has this idea. I've heard him talk about, I think it was in his first book, which I've neither bought nor read, but I've heard him talk about it. There was a chapter called Fuck Your Dreams. And what he talked about was how he, for a long time, pursued a career as a rapper. And he was not good at it at all.
I didn't actually know that. I thought that was a joke. Okay.
No, continue. He actually pursued a career as a rapper. And he says, he's like, it was so bad. Like, I think he has, he'll give you a couple lines that he wrote as an example. He's like, this is how bad it was. Like,
why his name is Charlemagne the God? Like, is that his rap
maybe.
Name?
Like,
because I'm like, who's like a DJ that's named Charlemagne the God? But continue.
So he was talking about how this was a dream that he held for so long, but not because that was actually what he was meant to do or where his gifts were, but because there were so few paths shown to him as a young Black man. So he sort of thought, okay, young Black man in this country, okay, should I be a rapper or should I be an athlete?
Yes.
And that was sort of all he saw as like a possibility for himself. So he's like, okay, I guess a rapper. And it took him a long time to realize, like, no, this dream that I have is like not based in anything real about myself. It's just like, I couldn't think of anything else.
Absolutely.
And I think that applies to me too in a different way. Like, I didn't know of a lot of career paths. I didn't see, I didn't know myself well enough also to sort of know what are the qualities that I really have, you know, like what are the gifts that I actually have. So yeah, I'm curious about that too. Like, how do we know when we have a dream that is really based in something real for us, for who we really are? And how do we know when our dream is based in something else, like who we've been told we're supposed to be, or what we've been shown is possible for people who look like us, or what we think, you know, will get us the love or recognition or wealth that we want?
And I feel like what your questions are like reminding me of how we just discussed earlier, like the conversation of like the good life or like the American or Canadian dream, or like what it means to like accomplish and like what does like a good life mean? Because so much of, I think, what we imagine for ourselves is so based and rooted in things that we didn't create. Like, these are not like original thoughts that we have. Like, we only have like X amount of jobs. Like, when I was like, you know, 12, there's only so many jobs that I thought that I could actually ever do until I realized, like, oh, there's like so much other shit you could do. You don't know that stuff until you're like, you know, working. And I feel like, you know, it's all well and good for us to follow the paths that are kind of prescriptive of like, you finish high school, you go to college, university, you get a degree, like that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I followed that path. So did you in many ways. Like, we both followed those paths. But I think for myself, I wish that I was given, I guess, more opportunity to explore the creative sides of myself, or like you were saying, like, what gifts do I actually have that aren't necessarily rooted in like contributing to this, like, I was going to say like the greater good, but I love the greater good. It's more just like contributing to this, like, we all play the same kinds of roles in our communities and there's no diversity of like what we can imagine for ourselves. And I think sometimes our dreams are so tied to like status and amassing like wealth or power, or like it's sort of based on this like commodified identity that we're trying to like accomplish or achieve. And like, there's a huge part of me, I think, as an adult now, where I'm like, especially because I just like quit my old job and I've gotten a new job, I'm like, well, like this old job that I had was like, it was paying me well. And like, you know, I followed the path of like, I did my master's and now I do this job. And like, I'm working with doctors. And it's like, so on paper, like all the things that you're like checking the boxes off. But in actuality, like, I wasn't actually happy there because I didn't feel like I was being able to like use my own, like bring my personal politics to my job. And this is just like about a job, I'm not talking about like things beyond how we earn the money that we need so we can eat and like live, right? Like, but even in my job, like, I was still feeling like, oh, like, am I really, is it a good idea for me to like mess up my life right now and like go do another job that pays me like, you know, well as well, but it was like more in line with things that I actually cared about. Like, that felt like a massive risk. And I think to your question about the, how do we differentiate from like the wild dreams that like motivate us and the things that are kind of like either like, I don't even know if it's like a waste of our time, but like, they're probably not going to, sorry, go ahead.
Taking us down the wrong path.
Yeah. Like taking us down the wrong path where it's actually just like not congruent to our own, like well-being and like nurturing ourselves and like growing the parts of ourselves that like are actually begging to be tended to and stuff like that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think dreaming is a necessary part of, especially in like our social justice movements, like we have to be able to spend time in like imagining the things that we wish existed. And we have to be like, I think, really brave sometimes to like take a chance on ourselves, even when the paths in front of us aren't like laid out very clearly as to how we're supposed to like accomplish this and this and this and this. Like, that's the gift of like regular capitalist, like go get a job after you go to university, is that it's like, it's pretty safe, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to end up in places where like we can, one, affect the most change, or two, I think more importantly, feel like we can show up as our whole selves to the world that we live in, you know?
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of what you're saying, reminds me of the Angela Davis quote that you have to act like it's possible to radically change the world and you have to do it all the time.
Well, damn. Yeah. And then like even thinking about Martin Luther King Jr., like, I have a dream. Like, everyone copy and pastes this speech to say, like, see, Martin Luther King was like, he was just so peaceful and whatever. He just had a dream. It was just a dream that he had. And it's like, yeah, but his dream that he was talking about, that was so unfathomable in the moment that he was saying what he was saying. And I think thinking about fear and dreams and about, like, daring to, like, put your shit out there and, like, let people know, like, what it is that you want. It's not all the time that dreams have to be, like, just about you. It could be, like, I dream for, like, a better future for, like, everybody around me. Or I dream of an environment that, like, is just so unbelievable right now. And I mean, like, look where we are since he's had that, said that I have a dream speech. But, like, putting that into, like, the universe, I think, is a really powerful thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you're really talking about dreams as fuel, right? And they can be what propels us to a better future, to, you know, collectively to creating this better world or this better community. And then in our own personal lives to build better lives for ourselves and build the things that we want for ourselves. And I'm still just really curious about the question of how do we know the difference between, like, the right kind of wild dream and the kind of wild dream that is not serving anybody, right? Like the ones, you know, of people who, you know, like me, and I'm sure many others who dream of, you know, being a performer in some way where that's, like, really not our gifts. Or, you know, the, like, Kanye West, who apparently is running for president, or, you know, like, where you're like, no, thank you.
Is he running for president?
Did you hear that?
I did. No, I know what you're talking about. I'm just kind of like, this nigga's I need him to stop talking. I need him to stop talking now. You know,
but even Kanye West himself, right? Like, this is, I think he early on had these dreams for himself that other people were like, it's not going to happen, both as a producer. And then when he was already a successful producer and he wanted to rap, and a lot of people in the industry were like, no, that's not a thing for you. And he believed in himself, right? And so he pursued that. And it turned out, yes, this was, like, actually really a gift that he had. And then now he's kind of taken it too far. And now he thinks every ridiculous idea he has should be reality. But it's like, again, that's the question. I'm like, how do we know the difference between these dreams that are like, yeah, they seem, you know, too crazy to actually exist or to come true, but we can get there and we should get there, versus the things that are like, no, that's not for you, or that's, like, not actually, that's not helpful for anybody.
I think that often, like, we tell ourselves that something is unrealistic when in reality it just takes a lot of work and skill building and, like, development that we currently might not have access to or have or possess. Like, it could be hard for me to accomplish something because I don't have enough money, or I don't have the time, or I don't know how to do something. Like, those kinds of resources that you just don't possess. And even if it's, like, the fine skill of doing the thing, like becoming a producer, for example. But I also think that, like, depending on the amount of, like, privilege and power, the actual work of accomplishing some things might be, like, within our means, or sometimes it might be, like, well beyond our means of what we can manage alone. So I think sometimes, like, the wild dreams, what's that phrase? Like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, sort of thing. Like, needing to rely on other people to, like, help bring the dreams that you might have come to fruition, as opposed to, because we live in a really, like, individualist world where we're like, okay, like, I'm going to be the one to, like, be famous. Like, it's going to be about me. Like, it's about, like, it's just all about, like, ourselves. But I don't know how often, and I don't know if this is helpful in the conversation, but part of me is thinking, like, the dreams that waste our time are the ones that I think are just, like, solely, this is just my own, this is my own personal opinion, the dreams that waste your time are the ones that are solely just about, like, us. I don't know if that's fair, but, like, there's a part of me that really believes that, because I'm like, if we're only focused on our own flourishing, I don't know. There's a part of me that's kind of like, well, is that a moving goalpost forever? Like, once we've made it there, will we continue to, like, push ourselves? And if we push ourselves, will we take others along with us? Like, or how are we getting to places of fulfillment and perhaps, like, making room for other people there? Or are we just trying to go alone and go fast and not try to go far with others? You know, like.
Right. Yeah, I think that's actually a really, really great point. It makes me think, I've heard a lot of people talk about this, there being this magic point where the gifts that you have to offer the world and what the world needs, or like how you can be of service, where those things intersect, that that's like the magic point, and that's like the thing that you're meant to be pursuing and doing.
Right.
Which I think, yeah, I think that is a really, really great point, that like if the only purpose of your dream is just for you as an individual to achieve, you know, wealth and status and things like that, then it does seem sort of like a waste of time if there isn't like a bigger sort of purpose, or it's not offering anything.
Yeah. And then like sort of to the question of like the Canadian or American dream, like, well, what does it mean to pursue that dream as a child of immigrants? As a person who's also trying to do decolonizing work, and I'm aware of the fact that, like, okay, let's say my dream is, like, I really want to own something. I really want to, like, own property. It's like, well, whose land am I on? Like, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, there's always going to be, I think, some friction with, like, some of the dreams that we have up for ourselves that, like, we have, I guess, like, bought into as, like, the ideal thing. And, like, once we've gotten that thing, then we're, like, finally we've made it. But I guess I'm trying to, like, problematize or, like, maybe fudge it a little bit so that I'm also considering, like, well, what does that look like to pursue things that might seem material as a person who also recognizes that, like, capitalism is a bitch, and, like, we actually don't need to live in this, like, this is not a sustainable system. There are people who are also suffering in ways that, like, and they don't have the opportunities to dream like I do, like, you know. And I'm not saying that everyone's, like, going to have the same, like, social justice orientation or be like an empath, or like maybe they should, like, that's, yeah, maybe they should, or maybe we should, maybe we could be more expansive in the dreams that we might have that aren't just singly focused on, like, accruing and amassing stuff for self or even our own families, but, like, going beyond that into community, and community that isn't, like, our own, even, like, people that don't look like us, that don't, like, you know what I mean, like, just opening up our sort of understandings of, like, what could be if we just focused our attention. Like, imagine if so many of us who are focused so much on, like, home ownership, for example, were instead focused on, like, yeah, we could, like, have a space as a collective, or we could, like, raise those same amounts of funds. This is just me, like, spitballing things, but, like, raise the same amounts of funds for to buy land and give it to, like, the indigenous people in our communities who've been saying land back for, since jump, you know? Like, and I get it. Maybe they seem very well beyond anything that anyone can, especially in this economy, especially in a place like Vancouver, like, all these, there's always going to be barriers to the things that, like, can be. But again, it kind of comes back to, like, me always asking myself, like, how dare I dream this big? Like, it's like, well, bitch, like, you should, like, you should be able to dream as big as you want. But I guess it's, like, interrogating and asking yourself, like, whether the dream is, like,
what's the purpose?
What's, like, the purpose? Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond just wealth, status, individualism, capitalism, like, what is this for, I think, is a really good question to be asking.
Yeah. And then, like, you were talking about wanting to also discuss, like, escapism as well. And one of the things that I was thinking of is, like, it's like a mental sort of, like, you're trying to put yourself mentally where you're not, to, like, either entertain yourself or, like, escape what's happening in your life. It's, like, shitty. A lot of the times escapism is framed as, like, it's frivolous, like, you're not really supposed to indulge in that. But I also am kind of like, well, who's saying those things? Like, I think escapism is necessary for folks that are at the margins and being made so marginalized and, like, having to brush up against the worst systems and, like, the kinds of oppression that, like, so many of us don't even realize exist. Like, you need to be able to, like, balance the fuck shit with just imagining you being a bird. Like, those things are important. You know what I mean?
And do you imagine yourself as a bird sometimes?
In therapy, yeah.
Oh, my God, I love that.
But that's, like, my negative one. It's, like, I'm an eagle when I'm, like, worrying about stuff. And, like, I really want to be, like a ground mouse. Like, just, like, focusing on the here and now and the present. But anyways.
Interesting.
But I'm also, what I think it's dangerous about escapism is when escapism is used by people who are actually not experiencing oppression, but would rather just turn their blinders on and focus on other shit. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and I think, I mean, from my own life, yes, escapism has been really useful for me. Like, it was very useful in my teen years when my life felt too painful to just go somewhere else. And even now, sometimes, like, when, like, the last, you know, month or so when I've had so many migraines and I, like, can't do anything at all and it's so painful, I'm glad I have such an active imagination. It's like, if I can't look at a screen or hear any sounds or have any light in the room and I like, can't talk, like I can't do anything, I can't read, like the only thing I can do is like use my imagination. So like, thank God I have such a developed imagination. But then even, yeah, as somebody who does experience oppression and who has experienced a lot of trauma, that escapism has helped me to survive, it can still go too far where instead of showing up to my life to make it better, it's easier to just go somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, I get that. And I feel like there's a fine line. I don't know. And I think it's so personal, right? Like, I don't know what people's wildest dreams are in their own heads. And I also don't know what people are experiencing that, like, don't present me with the information, like, clearly. But I think it's, like, up to us to be really honest with ourselves about how much we can actually tolerate. Like, we've talked about building tolerance for things and noticing, I would say, like, noticing when we are put under, and this isn't speaking specifically to you, but I'm thinking about, like, for myself in times where I'm like, oh, I'd rather not engage with this thing. And it's like, well, that's a privilege. Like, if it's a rather not, or if it's like, I'm actually like unable. My system is, yeah, like if my system is completely like shutting down and I'm unable to, like, those are different things. And having like the honesty with yourself to be like, okay, well, like, am I being truthful about my experience, or am I like co-opting somebody else's experience and like putting it on, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think what you're talking about is really key, the honesty, and I think the intentionality. Like, these are tools that we can sometimes use, you know, fantasy, daydreams, like escapism, these are tools that we can use, but we need to know when we're doing it, and we need to be able to decide how much is useful and how much isn't, which, you know, might come with some experimentation, but it needs to be an intention that we have. And I think this actually might be, you know, sort of a way that we can figure out in what ways are we, you know, being fueled and in what ways are we wasting our time, is to have this balance between what's happening in our head and what we're actually doing in real life. So like, on an individual level, you know, if I'm dreaming about being a performer and I'm never performing in real life, like, I have no idea if I'm going down the right path or not, because I'm not testing it. And I think on the collective level, you know, like, you see all these people sometimes who have these like supposedly great, you know, refined politics that come from just like sitting alone and reading and thinking. But if you never go out into your community and try to organize or try to actually put those values into practice, you're not going to realize whether you're actually really off base about what you think, you know, certain communities want or need or are capable of doing.
Absolutely. I think what you're speaking to is like the iterative nature of like escaping and dreaming and like plotting and getting excited about something theoretically and then putting it into practice and testing it. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, a lot of the times we can get so stuck, and like, I'm so guilty of this, like getting so stuck and like, I wish this existed, I wish that I could do this, and like also not pushing myself to actually go and like try to do the thing because of like the fear of failure or the fear of being found out or like the shame that like, well, what if somebody like sees that I'm not good enough, or like, you know, there's just always going to be a million reasons why we shouldn't try things. But I think I like what you're saying is like, it can't just be in our heads intellectually. It also has to be like going into our communities and whatever that looks like for whatever the dream is that you have for yourself or for others. It's like, we have to be taking actual steps to try to realize those dreams, or else they're just always going to be dreams. And like, I was thinking about Langston Hughes, A Dream Deferred, and like him talking about, you know, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Like, just talking about how things spoil over time. And it's like, we're given a lot of these gifts and dreams and in our imaginations to motivate us to like imagine a better thing for ourselves and other people. And so I think it requires us to actually take, like, even if it's like small baby steps. And like, I am telling on myself right now, because I'm like, there's tons of shit that I'm like, I wish I did this thing, but I'm not like taking those baby steps. And it's like, well, we just gotta.
Yeah, I love that. And that's I think a perfect way to end that part of the conversation. And I just want to get into our BIPOC of the week. So anyone who knows me knows, anyone who listens to this podcast probably knows that I'm obsessed with her. I want to talk about Octavia Butler again.
I knew you was gonna say that. I was like, Octavia right? Butler. Yes.
Exactly. So you know me. I feel very seen right now.
Good.
Anyway, so it's not just about her incredible ability to make her own dreams come true. There's actually writings of hers where she wrote down a lot of her own future successes, even like really huge ones, because she knew that she could manifest them. But I specifically want to talk about her short story. It's called The Book of Martha, which is in the collection called Bloodchild and Other Stories. So in this story, Martha is, much like Octavia, a Black woman novelist. And one night she suddenly finds herself with God. And she initially sees him as this giant white man in white robes on a throne. But God lets her know that that's not really what they look like. She's just seeing what her life has prepared her to see. And over the story, the way she sees God evolves. But anyway, God tells Martha that she's not dead, she's not dreaming. But God has chosen her to make an attempt to make humanity better, to slow us down and prevent us from destroying ourselves. So what she has to do is dream up a change that she can make to humanity to accomplish that. And God's there to talk things through with her, but ultimately she has to decide what the change will be, and it will be done. So after thinking for a while, Martha comes up with the idea of giving us more powerful, more intense dreams that give us a level of satisfaction that nothing in our waking lives can compare to. So this story makes me think about what dreams really are, about escapism and what the role of that can be, about what gives life meaning, about what we're able to envision and how we can consciously refine that. I read it about a decade ago and I still think about it all the time, both in processing the role of my dreams in my life and also in thinking about the kind of radical dreaming it takes to build the world we want. So I've only started to scratch the surface on what the story is about. So I would highly recommend reading the whole thing. And as always, endless gratitude to Octavia Butler.
Shout out to the homie. I feel like you would like recommend any of Octavia Butler's books. Like,
yeah, I've never read anything by her that I didn't love. That didn't make me really think.
Yeah. I feel like Octavia Butler is to you as Toni Morrison is to me. Like every time I'm like, oh, Toni said it, I'm gonna read it.
Oh, Toni Morrison is also amazing though.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I just want to say I also adore her. She's perfect.
I know.
So many novels, so little time.
I know. So true. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.